Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
We're giving away the secrets to our method of digitally and physically finding big bucks on public ground.
This mini-series is powered by Onyx, and we deep dive into what we look for on a map, how we scout it in person, and what pins we use to help us effectively hunt deer.
This is
Public Pins.
Okay, so today we are talking about, at least here on the Element Podcast, a very controversial subject. KC, we're talking about buck bedding today.
Woo-hoo.
And it's something that we do and don't believe in.
Yeah.
So let's just go ahead and talk about what is buck bedding.
Buck bedding would be where a buck beds. So I think that this is kind of where our line of delineation happens. If you're in the Midwest or even in the West, there are places that bucks specifically go to certain beds on certain winds, and you can just target this tiny little spot if you so choose to do so. Where we live in a good majority of the country, it's actually very hard to find a buck bed, or much less find one that's used, you know, a couple times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen deer bed like for the day from the tree stand, and it just be in a place that you're like, okay, well, there's no obvious sign of that being a bed, right? And I think what it boils down to is that there's a difference in a buck bed and a buck bedding area.
Yeah.
Okay. And when I say buck bedding area, I don't mean this is where all the bucks go and sleep, right? I really mean is like you can narrow it down to maybe an acre or 2 acres, half acre, something of an area that you know that a buck frequents pretty often, and he's going to be kind of in there.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you can't do the whole Mr. Cool Guy, I'm going to go set up on his bed and shoot him out of his bed when he stands up. You know, it might not be something that you can really make happen. And I, personally, I don't like to do that. I think it's a great way to mess everything up.
I do too. Why wouldn't you just shoot him in his bed?
Because if you got to.
Why do you wait till he stands up?
Yeah, you got to put it on outdoor TV. You can't shoot him in their bed. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know. Supposedly the vitals get weird whenever deer are laying down as opposed to standing up or whatever. I've never had the opportunity. Well, actually, I have, but it's been on a stalk to shoot a deer laying down. But yeah, I think that you shoot him when he stands up because you can actually see him when he stands up.
Yeah. So we've talked about now that buck bedding is a very maybe regionally specific ideology, and also maybe doesn't fully exist in most places, and that it's more what we think about when we think about buck bedding is an area that includes spots that a buck might bed or mm-hmm. a couple of bucks might bed.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times that's pretty thick stuff usually. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's decently far from a food source. in my opinion, but you just never know, I guess. But it's in a place almost always where that buck never gets messed with.
I think it's a good way to put it would be it's in an obscure place.
Yes.
It's in a kind of weird place a lot of times. I'm thinking about one I actually found this week. I found a specific buck bed, which is, doesn't happen very often, but we were way, way far from home in Illinois, and it's a place where it does happen. And this buck was bedded at the top of a ridge overlooking a creek, and he had his back to a huge blackberry thicket. And it was just, it was very typical of what you might see and hear from other people who hunt the northern Midwest a lot, you know. Like, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
And actually, Eric pointed out that, I think someone, he had read this somewhere, but I thought it was a great point. He said, you know, in that situation, if the buck gets away with his life, he thinks he won. Like, he thinks he did good. That's a good bed because he saw you and he got out of there. It's not that it's a bad thing that you bumped him and he's never going back there. I was like, that's a good point, man. I'm sure if you bumped him 7 days in a row out of there, he probably would change that bed. But, like, if you just locate that bed from there and know that it's there, you can kind of assume that he likes that spot.
Yeah, I also think that the way that you bump him is kind of part of that whole scenario as well. It's like, if you just about step on that deer before you bump him, he might freak out, and he may
I've
not.
I've seen that happen.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, if he sees you coming from 120 yards, man, that's a win for sure. You know what I mean? That's that's what the bedding is designed to do, is to allow them time to see something coming or smell something coming. So I feel like that's a little bit of it too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like that, I think about this, I've talked to a few people, including my dad, about this, but, like, in East Texas where we're at, there's a deer feeder on, you know, if there's a deer feeder every quarter mile, pretty much, you know, and so if not, you know, more. And we have, if you have 40 acres, like, you've got a pretty big chunk of land and at home. So I think that when I look at country that's like that and see, like, these bucks that are transitioning from summer patterns or summer areas that they live in to the fall and winter areas that they live in different parts of that countryside, you know, you don't have this buck on your property at certain times of the year a lot of times. Like, you're going to lose that deer one way or another in the summer or in the fall a lot of times. So, but one thing I think is, like, all these people, they recreate, they run cows, they got side-by-sides and four-wheelers and ATVs for you guys up north of the Mason-Dixon, or
quads.
What they call quads. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
even bikes, they call them bikes.
That's right. Yeah. I've heard that. So anyway, they're mowing their lawn and this stuff. These bucks, I think personally, can live on somebody's 5-acre lot if they never go to that back corner because it's got an old little creek in it that people used to dump in on that property and put, you know, cars and mattresses and junk like that back there. And it's just like a place that just stays kind of unmaintained. I mean, these deer will live there and never get, I mean, they will never deal with a human. And they're really not that far from people. You know what I mean? Still.
Yeah.
So I think that when it comes to buck bedding, that would be one of the more dramatically specific beds that you see. But then what happens is that they shed velvet and the testosterone starts to rise and they go and relocate to a place that they aren't so familiar with because they're only there for 3 months or 4 months. And now they've got to find places to bed. And this is the time that we're hunting them, right? So they're in places that they're chasing does all over the landscape across many people's properties, and they're bedding in a different place every night, just about. And I would think that's a pretty plausible scenario for most deer in most parts of the country.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's hard for me to believe that when you're hunting deer during the hunting season, that they have a specific bed that they go to every single night, pretty much. And
you
that,
mean day?
Well, yes. And so every single day they go to bed in, and that it's within, you know, 3 feet of that where he betted the day before or whatever. So, like, I guess with that, that's the disclaimer as to what buck betting is, what we consider it to be.
Yeah.
And so now let's talk about in what situation do you like to hunt it, and also where does this rank?
It ranks very low for me.
Okay.
I mean, again, we said this almost every time we talk about this, but this is very situational. If I figure out that I know where a big buck is bedding, I will go do my best to shoot him, mm-hmm. right? But it's not something that I'm able to figure out very often. However, I can figure out the general area that he is bedding, and I can figure out what trail I need to set up on to try to target that deer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say for usability for me in my hunting situations that I get into, this is probably number 10. And there are worse tactics, and this is a good one, but for me, I do not utilize it that often.
Yeah,
it is not high up there. You kind of about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a great piece of information to know if you can know it, the mm-hmm. area at least, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, but to actually hunt that deer, mm-hmm. I think you've got to use other tactics that we've talked about on this series. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah. So how if you let's establish this, okay? We are not even going to spend the time to try to find specific beds because it's not worth it
mm-hmm.
in the areas that we hunt fairly often,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it'd be different if like we're going to Illinois, Ohio, somewhere like that, and maybe spending some time and hunting. I can see the merit in it. But the way we hunt, you're going to probably utilize trail cameras to figure out maybe an area that a buck is entering and exiting at the right times of day to figure he's going in there bedding,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
How are you going to hunt that area?
So let me give a little anecdotal piece here.
Okay.
We started hunting together in 2016, late mm-hmm. 2016. That postseason, so it was technically 2017, but it was January. I hung a camera on a field edge and found a buck that we think was three. And we called him Teenager, just so we could keep up with him. He's a big eight his whole life, pretty much, with kind of some funky things going on. Real cool deer. Big bodied looking dude. Anyway. Found him in obviously coming into that field at night, and tried to backtrack him. First attempt, couldn't figure out, you know, where the first attempt we didn't find him. We went down the wrong area or trail. The trails don't carry out, you know what I
yeah.
mean? And so we went the wrong way. Well, then we moved the camera actually quite a ways away and found him, down by a creek system. So creeks are very important to deer. We've talked about that on this series as well. Over the course of the next couple 4 years, I hunted this deer, and I don't think we saw him this year on any trail cameras, and I'm not sure he's still alive. He would have been seven this year. This deer had absolutely no pattern to, and we ran cameras all over this place. Had a creek system running through it. We ran them on both sides of the creek.
The best pattern we could come up with was his irregularity.
Yeah.
Like, we figured out that he would hop around and be somewhere for 3 to 5 days, and then he would hop somewhere else. But there was no, like, circle or figure eight or anything. You never knew where the next place he would be.
I mean, it seemed like if you could go in and check a camera and he was there that day, you should hunt there the next 2 days.
Yeah.
But then he's probably gone. Because he would show up, you'd see him for 2 days at one camera, and then you'd see him a half mile the other direction for a couple of days, and then he wouldn't be on a camera for a day, and then he would be a quarter mile in the other direction. I mean, we were just spiderwebbing this area. We spent so much time on the spot looking for a pattern on this deer. And so I guess for me, the idea behind, you know, finding this deer or finding a buck bed and trying to hunt the deer out of his bed really just doesn't make any sense. And I think that there are situations. So, like, this year, we knew, like, say, South Dakota.
Yeah.
We knew where bucks were bedding and that it was in a relation to an alfalfa field, and you and I just needed the right wind to go in there. And when once we got the right wind, literally the first afternoon in, we both shot bucks.
Yeah.
This, I wouldn't necessarily call it buck bedding. I guess technically I did figure out on the morning before that a lot of bucks were bedding on a specific side of this kind of like tree line, you know, half moon crescent thing that we were hunting. And but there was does bedding in this area as well, just because it's good bedding. But I think, you know, that's a place where you could use buck bedding to your advantage.
Well, it was that we were hunting bedded deer. It wasn't technically hunting the beds.
Yes, right. We're hunting them moving actually to ag.
Yeah, it's so. A bed to feed pattern, but to identify. To hunt bed to feed, you have to identify the bedding portion of the feed is easy to identify, right? But if you break it down into really simple terms, you have to be able to identify that those deer aren't leaving that field out the north. They're leaving that field out the south to go to sleep. You know, like it can be very simple.
And so you can generally locate bedding that way.
Yeah.
You can more specifically do it, I guess, like we did, but then you could really, I guess, narrow it down to the actual buck's bed. And I think that sets up, you get some guys that hunt different situations and swamps, you know, Louisiana has some of that near us and whatever. And they apparently have that kind of thing going on. You know, our buddy Greg up in New Jersey does that some, where he's got these like islands on the swamps, you know, and I can see how that works. So I'm not trying to write it off necessarily, but I think for the majority of us,
in that situation in South Dakota, if we tried to go in there and hunt a specific buck bed, A, we'd have to bump him out of there probably that day to find the bed, and B, even if we tried to go in and hunt like even a more localized version, there's a good chance we get founced out and it ain't happening that night, you know, because it's just fairly open.
You know,
it's not the thicket stuff that you can kind of enter into and climb up a tree and have a deer 40 yards from you not realize you're there. Like, they're just going to see you. It's just how it is.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I think that hopefully you guys are getting the gist of what we're throwing down here. So let's talk about how we find our version of buck bedding on the map.
I'm looking for obscurities.
Obscurities.
Right? So assuming that you're talking about like deer who can leave and go eat somewhere else at night, you know, big woods is probably a good bit harder to identify. Well, let's start with that. If you're hunting big woods and you know it's fairly pressured, it's kind of the go pretty far back in there type thing. That's just kind of the way to find it. So, you know, you can probably say, people talk about mile back. I think those people don't really use the measuring tool on Onyx very often. You know, really, I'm being truthful. Anything over a half mile is a pretty good jaunt for most fellers. Maybe not scouting, but like when you got all your hunting stuff on your back and all that, and you're thinking about trying to get a deer out and all this, you know, what we see this week in Indiana. I mean, we were 6/10 of a mile and there was a ladder stand. And then we walked literally 20 steps further and we started seeing a bunch of sign. It was like, it was like that was the mark, you know, like where the deer felt comfortable. So I think that that's kind of the thing that you can use is just straight up line distance tool on a map to tell, okay, from this parking area, I can go 3/4 of a mile right here and find some decent habitat and there's a chance. Now,
you could use the shape tool to just, like, deny yourself of even scouting anything within that radius if you wanted to, you know?
Yeah, you could, for sure. You, if you're in a place that's a little bit more broken, like a creek bottom scenario or a woodlot scenario, you know, or fence lines between ag fields or whatever, I'm looking for those obscurities. And a lot of times that's, like, you know, shelter belts or... even we've talked about this, you've mentioned it a couple times on the series, but homesteads, man, like bucks kind of like that, like farm equipment stuff or, you know, houses or whatever, or, you know, good thick cover. You know, that I described that one earlier that I found in Illinois pretty perfectly, that the cover to back thing's a real deal. You know, like they like that stuff. I also found another one in Illinois that was right up against a log. I mean, it was a thing, right? But if you're talking about the areas type stuff, you know, really, really high stem count. I think that's what in Texas our deer bed in a ton is they just go find, you know, really thick grass or really thick trees and bed up in that stuff.
Especially because a lot of that stuff's river bottom or creek bottom, and it tends to, you know, flood out and be kind of a high canopy, nothing underneath. So if you find, if you can find that, and you can see that a lot of times in on maps as well. I think I do think there is something to the distance in most cases. I think it needs to be pretty far back usually when you're talking about. And the thing is, you know, you don't have to hunt a deer, a buck that you think beds 3/4 of a mile from the parking area at 3/4 of a mile. You know, you can hunt them at a half mile and still, you know, if it's the right situation, expect that you might kill them or whatever. And obviously the different phases of the season and the rut make all this kind of, you know, variable. But I think for me, looking on a map, I'm typically looking for stuff that sets up. I mean, another thing you could do, but I think stuff that sets up pretty far back away from stuff. But the idea, the main, like, common denominator in buck bedding is that the buck does not hardly ever get messed with or see people, I think. He had, you know, KC and I talk about this a lot. It's like the older you get as a man, the less you want to, you know, hang out with a bunch of wild people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you want to go out in your garden and look at your tomatoes in the silence.
Yeah, and a lot of dudes just want to sit in their recliner or whatever, and that's what a buck kind of wants to do. He wants to kind of be left alone a lot, you know? And I think that silence is something that a buck needs. It's a necessity. It's, you know, something that they are very much keen to, I guess. And so I think that those are a couple of things that we should look for when it comes to finding it on a map. Another thing you can look at on a map a lot of times is, especially if you're hunting private land, I think, is you look at a food source, and this is the destination, right? You know that this is where deer end up. You may know that bucks end up here because you have a trail camera on the field edge. You can see those thickets sometimes when you look at aerials, right? The first thicket from that food source tends to have does in it, and the does really, they just don't let the bucks in. The only time the buck goes in there is when he's charging in. He's just full of testosterone and rage, and it's November, you know. That's the only time he's really allowed in. Otherwise, that doe will just fight him off pretty much. But the second, you know, from distance wise, the second thicket is where you're going to start finding more of the bucks, I think. And it may not even be mature bucks yet. It just depends on how far that is, where he feels comfortable. But I think you'll see more bucks in a situation like that. So you can kind of, like, use the shape tool there where you can mark out this little area and you can denote that as doe bedding. And then this could possibly be, you know, buck bedding that's a little bit further away. So We've tried to locate this on a map, these buck bedding areas, we're going to call them. You go in there after you've located this thing, and you get on the ground with it, and what are you looking for?
Of course, if you want to, you can look for the holes that a deer lays down in, also known as a bed, right? I think what helps me more than anything when I'm looking for beds is if I find multiple that aren't big body looking things, I know it's doe bedding. I think that's really what helps. I have a hard time finding the buck beds in East Texas, but sometimes you can find the doe beds. And so it's a good way to kind of cross a spot off. I think you're looking for thicket. I think you don't want to be able to see much more than 10 yards, and if you do, it needs to be very advantageous to the spot to be able to see, like predators coming or whatever. I think that shade is a big deal where we live, especially. You know, maybe if you, I don't know, anywhere it's hot in the summer for a big old thick-haired deer, you know, like they like to be in the shade. I think that you're going to be able to find a little bit of sign in there as well. There's going to be rubs around. I don't think you're going to find those big old, you know, thick tree, you know, perennial rubs. I think you're going to find little wispy-type rubs and stuff, you know, where he's like, I just woke up from a nap. You know, it just kind of hits this tree a little bit and stuff. I think that's the thing you're going to find in there. And then I also don't think it's going to be hands and knees situation for you to get off in there. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be, I mean, how bad do you dislike it when vines grab your backpack and pull on you?
Yeah.
It's not fun. And deer can't be any different with their antlers, right? Like, they don't want to be off in there fighting and kind of poking through. Like, that's what they do whenever they're really getting pushed by a bunch of guys with shotguns or something. You know what I mean? They're going to kind of find a place that's pretty comfortable to get into.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, too, there's you know, if you're in there trying to find a buck bed, there's going to be hair in it if it's a recently used buck bed. So one thing you can do is get down in there and see if there's deer hair in it, find that hair. Another thing that I think I've seen you do maybe before, but I think is very something that you could do if you were into this, is get down on your hands and knees and smell the bed. If it's close to the rut or something like that, and you happen upon this while you're scouting and you're just trying to learn something, get down there and smell that bed. And if it smells raunchy, you know it's probably a buck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it smells like deer.
Yeah.
Something I probably need to point out before we go a little bit too any further is that another reason why we don't do the buck bedding thing too much in Texas is because of pigs. We probably need to talk about that.
That's kind of what I was going to mention with the hair, and I forgot. I was forgetting that point though.
So tell
them the tip about how to, because what we run into a lot of times is buck bedding gets bucks get moved around a lot with pigs in the area because pigs will dominate the area.
Yeah, they'll use the best habitat because they're more aggressive, or they're not like trying to bite the deer or whatever, but just like their nature is they're a big.
Deer don't bother pigs. Pigs bother deer.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're noisy.
Yes.
And stinky
and nasty and all the things. So
loud.
If you do find a bed and you live in an area where hogs live, hog hair is triangular whenever you cut it in a cross section. Okay, so of course hair is long, but if you were to take it with scissors and snip it, and then look at a end of that blunt end of the hair with a magnifying glass, it would look like a triangle. You can take a piece of hair in your hand and roll it and feel the tut 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 as the triangle rolls through your fingers, and you'll know it is hog hair. Therefore, hogs have been in that bed, which means probably there are not deer there currently.
Yeah. This is, so there's some people right now from up north that are thinking this is a dumb tip, but not all hogs are black or pink.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of hogs that are the color of a deer.
We get some blondies down here.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So you're going to run into that sometimes. And not to mention, if it's a white hair off of a hog, a deer has white hair on its belly, you know? So, We've had ourselves do that several times, and come to find out that the bed or the buck bed that we found was actually a 250-pound hog. So you know, you run into those issues, and that's another thing with us, and why we struggle to really focus on buck bedding is because the hogs at any time can come in there. Just a sounder of them, they're very nomadic at times, and they will just run in there and do whatever they want. And it's really not like they're bullying them out. It's this, they're just rooting around,
social pressure,
and they're just being loud and everything, and the buck just eases off usually. You know, so you know, we've talked about kind of some of the things that it takes to find them on these bucket bedding areas on a map, some of the things I guess now that we're looking for when we get in there, like you said, lots of rubs around, usually right around some of the more particular beds, some of these thickets and stuff. And then you know, the fact that you know, it's not something that, like, I think if you just walked in there and walked to it and you weren't really kind of trying to get to this spot or kind of hustling through the vines and stuff, it may not be buck bedding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or it may not be a mature buck.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about as well.
I think in our area, the privet trees make pretty good bedding. It's an invasive. It's a non-native. It's not a great thing, but the deer do use it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think it makes good bedding. It's very thick, but there will be like openings and tunnels and stuff through.
And they have an evergreen aspect,
yes,
too.
Exactly. So, there's always cover.
Yeah, so that's, and another thing about them is, I talked about this in doe bedding around honeysuckle thickets, is there's a browse with the privet as well. So they're going to browse some of the ends of those privet. And when you shot that public land spike in 2018, that deer was, his whole belly was full of the blue berries that come off that privet. So.
Yeah, they put off those berries kind of midwinter or whatever, and he's eating the tar out of them.
Yeah, so now we've looked at what we're going to, you know, how to find them on a map, what to do when we get there, what to look for. Let's talk about, you know, how we hunt it a little bit. And you know, obviously we're not super big fans of this, so we're not typically setting up on that buck bedding area. We're doing a little bit, kind of backing off a little bit, right, usually, and finding something else.
Yeah, the only way I'm hunting it is if I'm out of state. You know, South Dakota's kind of the prime example of us kind of doing that, like really having the knowledge of where deer were sleeping and then going in and killing them. But say locally in Texas or in the South, the only way I'm hunting buck bedding and like that being the primary tactic is if I can establish a bedding area and then hang trail cameras in that general area and get like MRI, most recent information of bucks or a particular target buck using that spot on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Going in there and assuming, you know, you get a picture of him in twilight in the morning, or you get a picture of him at, you know, 6:30 in the evening and he's headed out of the thicket into the more open stuff and vice versa in the morning, right? Like that's the about the only time I'm going to set up on that buck bedding. And I think it's kind of like how we hunt scrapes, where you'd probably hunt it October and hunt it on a weather day.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good idea, you know. I think for me, I'm gonna pair the knowledge of the buck bedding area with some other feature that I can use to my advantage to ambush that deer somewhere between his bed and his food source that night most of the time. And I think that what I would do is I'm trying to hunt closer to the bed probably, but it really just depends on, you know, what I think his movement is mm-hmm. before dark, and then and what I think I can get away with, and what the best, just most foolproof thing is for me. Because, you know, if you've got more time to hunt this deer, there's no reason to mess him up off of this pattern that he's got. So if you can be pretty conservative, or at least hunt a spot that maybe the spot is aggressive, but the access is great, and the wind is great for it, you know, I think that's kind of the ideal situation. So like for me, I'm thinking about like South Dakota last year. You know, I was in there a little bit further down towards the bedding than you were. We set up kind of to hunt two different travel patterns from mm-hmm. that bedding to this food source. And, you know, I was sitting basically, I guess you could call it a pinch. I could almost shoot to all the timber there.
Yeah.
And had a couple of trails coming through this kind of strip of woods, and ended up shooting a deer in there. And then, you know, on my Texas public land buck last year, I had seen this deer go to bed in the morning. And I didn't see a whole lot of him, so I didn't know exactly where he was bedding, but I thought I knew within 40 acres where he was at, you know, mm-hmm. 20 acres probably, really, where he was at generally. And so I hunted a food source close to there, and that was persimmon trees. And so, you know, I'm essentially pairing that food source, that kind of native natural food source, with the fact that I know kind of where he's bedding, and just know that deer doesn't have to travel too far to get to me, so there's a good chance I see him in daylight. And I actually mm-hmm. shot him like 2 minutes before shooting light.
Yeah.
And so it worked out. It almost didn't. You know, it's kind of hot, kind of early. So that's kind of the conservative game you play. But the thing is like if he hadn't come in till after dark, I wasn't going to have to access or leave my, you know, stand mm-hmm. past where he was at. So yeah. it was a conservative play still. But
what's your thought for how you're going to mark this stuff?
You know, I think that I think, like I said, buck bedding is not like the most important thing to us when it comes to hunting,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes to kind of the strategy we employ, if we know that where the bucks are bedding mm-hmm. in an area, it's very important. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not where we're going to hunt, but it sets up everything else about how we hunt. And so I think it's important to mark that. But for me, like, it's one of those things that I'm just not going to forget. If yeah. I saw a shooter buck going into an area one or two nights, even just one night, like, I know that's the spot, and I'm mm-hmm. focusing on that for the next several days until I mess something up or he does something different. And so it's not something that I necessarily need to mark, but like if we're really moving around the country and there's, you know, if there, say there's only one buck and we got two guys trying to shoot bucks, I would just essentially mark it as bedding. And I know you probably would put like the buck head in there too as well.
Yeah.
I actually probably would just type the title as buck bedding.
Yeah.
And then maybe make a note as to what buck it was. If I feel like I need to, I'm going to get confused or something. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from there, I'm marking those other things that help me to ambush that deer, you know, those other different factors or different pins, I guess, you know.
I think that a lot of times I am, what's the right word here, kind of advantageously marking buck bedding. Like when I see a deer that I bump, I always go over and try to find his bed and mark that, because I think that you can learn some stuff when you go in there, because you can kind of see why he was laying there, right? So I'll mark particular beds then. This is a time when maybe you can use the shape tool a little bit and kind of mark like the bedding area. You think this is the kind of stuff. I don't really do that, but you could if you wanted to. One of the things that I would use is probably the trail camera icon and kind of, you know, put out my web of trail cameras. If I was trying to condense the area that I thought that deer was living in, that way I could, you know, kind of mark on the map and say, okay, I feel pretty good about this net or this web, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can start taking those off as you pull cameras or do different things or whatever. But, yeah, I think that's kind of the way that I would approach it still. And I'm just like you, like, it's just never going to be my primary thing. Mm-hmm. I do, at least on Texas public land and on most public places, man. Because here's the other thing about buck bedding. If you're on public land, you never know who went in there yesterday and busted him out of there, and he won't be back for a week, too, you know. So,
and that's the thing, is if you go all the way in, which is probably pretty far, to hunt this specific buck bed or this small little tiny area where this buck is bedding, and he got bumped yesterday, then you ain't seeing a deer all night.
No,
you know what I mean? Like you don't even have a chance.
Yeah.
If you're hunting a scrape or if you're hunting a creek horn or something like that, you still have a chance of a different shooter buck coming by you.
Yeah.
But you probably don't stand a chance of seeing a deer if he's been bumped.
That's
bumped.
Right.
It's like an all or nothing kind of deal, you know? And for me, I like seeing deer.
If you're into this kind of stuff and feel like you need more, you can check out our Map Scout Challenge series on YouTube. These are the most comprehensive scouting videos on the internet.
Make sure and subscribe while you're there. And also remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate Batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate Batteries. I use Interstate Batteries in my boats. I use Interstate Batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.